A young British woman with barely any education stood before a prestigious missionary society hoping they'd send her to China. They rejected her outright. No qualifications, too old at 28, unlikely to master Chinese. Most people would have accepted defeat, but Gladys Aylward wasn't most people. With 9 pence in her pocket, roughly the cost of a cheap sandwich today, she bought a one-way train ticket across Europe, through war-torn Russia, into the unknown. What possesses someone to risk everything on what seems like foolishness? Her story reveals a truth we've forgotten. The most unlikely people often accomplish the most extraordinary things when they stop waiting for permission and start moving forward in faith. Gladys wasn't seeking adventure or fame. She'd wanted to be an actress, working as a parlor maid while taking evening drama classes. After a profound spiritual awakening, she felt an unmistakable pull toward China's millions who'd never heard of Christ. When every door slammed shut, she remembered Abraham and Moses, ordinary people called to impossible tasks. She saved every penny from her parlor maid wages until she had enough for the railway fare. On October 15, 1932, she left everything familiar behind, carrying only her Bible, a devotional book, and a faith that seemed absurd to everyone watching. The journey nearly killed her before reaching China. Fighting near the Manchurian border stranded her in freezing Siberia. Speaking no Russian, she trudged through snow back to Chita, where Soviet officials detained and questioned her. A new visa in hand, she discovered Japanese forces had blocked her route, forcing her toward Vladivostok instead. What followed reads like a spy thriller. An English-speaking interpreter seemed helpful at first, but refused to return her passport. "Why leave? You have no money for tickets. Stay here and help us," he insisted. His chilling words, "China is far away. You stay in Russia. We will look after you," made his intentions clear. She was being trapped. Then came an encounter that defied explanation. A mysterious girl approached her by the seashore, urgently warning that if she didn't escape immediately, she never would. Following the girl's instructions, an old man led her to the docks before dawn. She begged a Japanese captain to take her aboard. When Russian soldiers tried to stop her, she threw her last English pound note at them, creating just enough confusion to escape. Divine intervention or remarkable luck? After 20 years in China, Gladys would have no doubt which. Yangcheng was a walled town nestled between bare mountains, accessible only by muddy mule tracks. Mrs. Lawson, the 73-year-old missionary who'd agreed to take Gladys in, greeted her casually. "And who are you?" Their inn catered to mule drivers, offering clean beds, good food, and nightly Bible stories. While Mrs. Lawson and Mr. Liu shared these stories, Gladys scraped mud off mules so their owners could listen. After Mrs. Lawson's death, Gladys struggled alone, barely understanding the language, financially strapped, the only European for miles. Then the Mandarin arrived with 3 sword-bearing soldiers. Instead of the threat her cook feared, he made an extraordinary request. The new government had banned foot binding, but enforcement required someone with unbound feet to inspect women in every village. As the only such woman in the district, Gladys was appointed official foot inspector, complete with mule, soldiers, and modest payment. She accepted on one condition: she could preach everywhere. Suddenly, doors opened throughout the province. She'd examined feet, insisting girls unbind them or face imprisonment. But first, she'd engage villagers with stories and songs, explaining that God made boys and girls' feet alike. She became the storyteller, welcomed everywhere, with small groups of converts forming village by village. One day, Gladys encountered a woman with a desperately ill child, thin, dirty, covered with sores. When Gladys expressed concern, the woman callously replied she could get another to take her place tomorrow if the child died. She offered to sell the child, haggling down from 0.5 crown to 9 pence, all Gladys had. The woman accepted, pushing the child into her arms. Within days of washing and feeding, 9 pence was transformed. Soon she brought in a street boy, who brought in 2 more, until Gladys had about 20 children. a single foreign woman with barely enough resources, suddenly responsible for 20 mouths to feed, yet they never went without. And her crushing loneliness was replaced by a home bursting with children who desperately needed her. Her family grew when she confronted a household hiding girls with bound feet. She discovered five little girls and their caretaker, Mrs. Ching, who'd been purchased to bind their feet for profitable resale. After sharing the gospel, Gladys took them all in. Mrs. Ching witnessed their loving community and surrendered her life to Christ. They purchased her freedom, and she began telling other women how Jesus had freed her heart, bound up tight with sin, like I bound up the feet of the little girls. The peaceful rhythm shattered in 1937 with the Chinese-Japanese War. Wounded soldiers flooded their town as invasion loomed. Despite danger, over 1,000 believers made treacherous journeys through Japanese-patrolled territories to attend their annual Christian convention. When military blockades prevented their scheduled speaker from arriving, Gladys retreated to pray. A dust-covered soldier appeared, initially dismissed, but divine providence revealed him as Jonathan Wen, a Christian doctor. Wen led their convention for 5 days with extraordinary spiritual authority, sparking remarkable revival. Dozens came forward daily, hardened soldiers, local merchants, curious townspeople. Meetings extended late into night, with spontaneous prayer groups forming throughout town. On the final morning, hundreds gathered before dawn, praying in various languages. The scene resembled Pentecost, with waves of prayer rising like thunder. Just 2 days later, Japanese forces entered their region, yet their guests had safely returned to mountain villages, carrying what many described as heaven's glory. During this period came an extraordinary conversion, a Chinese general who'd previously led a notorious bandit troop. Standing before his men, he declared, "We have been a bandit troop, living by violence and fear. Now we will become honorable soldiers, because last night I took Jesus Christ as my God." 2 years later, he was captured and tortured by his former comrades for his faith. Though his body was broken, his spirit remained undiminished until his death. As war intensified, orphaned children flooded Gladys's mission. With over 100 children and dwindling resources, she contacted Madame Chiang Kai-shek's government orphanages in Free China, which agreed to care for them if she could transport them to Shensi Province. When urged to retreat, Gladys declared, "Christians never retreat." Days later, she learned the Japanese had posted a reward for her capture. After praying with church elders, she opened her Bible to "Flee ye into the mountains." By morning, Japanese soldiers surrounded the city. She escaped through the Gate of the Dead as bullets riddled her abandoned coat. Despite warnings the journey was impossible, Gladys resolved to lead 100 children to Shensi herself. The group, aged 3 to 16, trekked across mountain ranges, sleeping under open sky, begging food along the way. She kept spirits up with hymns and Bible verses. After 12 days, they reached the deserted Yellow River with no ferry. Gladys prayed through the night until 13-year-old Sulan reminded her, "Jehovah is still God." A Chinese officer arranged a boat. They continued by train, crossed treacherous mountains on foot, and hid sleeping children among coal in trucks at Tungquan. After 27 days, they reached Xi'an and delivered the children safely before Gladys collapsed with pneumonia and typhus. After recovering, Gladys continued working with refugees, exploring northwestern territories, and ministering in prisons where her simple touch on a condemned murderer's shoulder sparked revival throughout the facility. When 200 university students who'd converted during her gospel campaigns faced execution, all maintained their faith. A 17-year-old girl declared, "Now I know Jesus Christ is real. I know this book is true." All were beheaded that day. After 20 years in China, Gladys returned to England feeling foreign in her birthplace. Though English by birth, she was Chinese in nationality, dress, food, and thought. She spoke across the country, formed a Chinese church in London, and eventually returned to Formosa and Hong Kong, establishing missions and orphanages. Her story challenges everything we believe about qualifications. She had 9 pence and a calling, no training, no connections, no backup plan, just stubborn faith that refused to accept impossible. In a world demanding credentials before action, Gladys reminds us that God doesn't call the qualified, He qualifies the called. Your inadequacy isn't disqualification, it's what makes room for something greater. The question isn't whether you're ready, but whether you're willing to move forward with what you have.